Morning.
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 Oh, Karina, in your Italian estate there.
Oh, God, don't we all wish, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm going to grab coffee. I'll be back.
Of all you iPhone users, got your software update installed?
No, what is it?
They were said on the news this morning there was a vulnerability found, so they're frantically telling all iPhone users to do a security update, a security patch.
Oh, I'm gonna do it right now then. That's scary. That's almost worse than somebody getting their hands on my debit card or, like getting into your phone. It's like, whoa. Do you think it had anything to do with, was there something with Verizon and everything yesterday too?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard something like on the news about that. I can't remember, but hi, John.
Hey, good morning, Karina. Good morning, everyone. Hey, Vance and Andrew, how are you guys doing? Cindy,
Good.
Lynn,
Good.
Alyssa, Nemo, great to see everyone. Valerie.
Good morning.
Kima, was that a Benjamin or was that a, or what was that
It's all about
on
the
there?
That'll be in my head all day. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, shall we go ahead and get started?
Maybe give maybe a couple more minutes. I don't know where. There's Bridget. I see, past chair John Lamont. Is he, do we have to wake him up over there? Is he still sleeping too?
Well, Sarah showed up, so I think we should get the party started.
Let's do it.
All right, let's call to order the January 27th, 2021 meeting of the Clackamas County Economic Development Committee. I am your chair, Vance Tong, coming to you live from outer space, as you can see. And today we're going to have a few presentations. First is Andrew, well, let's do introductions first and go around the room. And Lynn, do you want to start off? And you're on mute, Lynn.
Sorry about that. Lynn Wallace from Oregon Employment Department. I'm an economist, mainly centered in Clackamas County.
Andrew?
Good morning, Andrew Naylor, Assistant County Counsel. I am attorney for Clackamas County. I represent BCS, H3S, Finance. In fact, I think I probably represented just about every department of the county at some point by now. And I'm here to give a brief presentation on the Oregon Public Meetings Act.
Karina?
Good morning, Karina Copeland, Clackamas County Economic Development.
Mr. LaGarza?
Good morning, everyone. John LaGarza, Business Community Services, Economic Development.
Cindy?
Good morning, everyone. Clackamas County, Business and Community Services, Economic Development.
Kimo?
Good morning. Kimo Rosa, Clackamas Federal Credit Union. I'm the Chief Lending Officer.
Mr. Lamont?
John Lamont, I'm a principal with the Lamont West City Planning and Development Consulting Company. Former chair, 2020.
Sarah?
Happy New Year.
Good morning, I'm Sarah Ekman, Deputy Director with Clackamas County Business and Community Services.
Alyssa?
Good morning, everyone. Alyssa Mahar, Vice President, Clackamas Community College.
Shannon?
Morning, Shannon Eilis. I am a small business owner, realtor in Westland. I'm also on the EDC in Westland.
Bridget?
Good morning, I'm Bridget Daisy, Executive Director of Clackamas Workforce Partnership.
Jody?
Good morning, Jody Bailey, Director of Membership Services with the Home Builders Association of Metropolitan Portland.
William?
William Gifford with Small Flags, owner, owner-operator, and director of the Oregon City Business Alliance.
Valerie?
Good morning. I am Valerie Chapman. I'm the vice chair of the Oak Grove Community Council. I also have chaired the Park Avenue Community Advisory Council. So yes. Just sitting in with you this morning.
Okay. Thank you. Stacia?
So, hi, I'm Stacia Hernandez-Nekanim. I'm the Chief of Staff for the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. I oversee our Economic Development Department, and I'm in charge of the Blue Heron and Wood Village and Chamao Station developments for the tribe.
And Mr. Goodman.
Good morning.
We're in doing introductions. Do you want to say anything else, Jeff?
A happy member of the Economic Development Commission and a past member of the Lake Oswego City Council.
Good. So before we get started, I just wanted to say that I informed the exec committee, but the rest of you haven't heard yet. One of my goals this year is we're going to run tighter meetings. And to that end, as some of you know already, I'm going to be asking that as many packets as possible that can be sent out with the agenda so that everybody has a chance to review them beforehand rather than during the meeting. That's what our goal is. So as you see, we have our annual report and the public meetings packet that I hope everybody's looked at least a little bit. And without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Andrew and talk about Oregon public meetings and ethics laws.
All right. Good morning. Let me see if I can get this screen sharing to work. Is that up?
Yep.
Okay. Again, my name is Andrew Naylor, Assistant County Counsel. Typically, Stephen Madcore, the Clackamas County Council, would give this presentation, but he has a conflict this morning, so unfortunately, you're stuck with me, but I think we will be able to get through it. So, Oregon Public Meetings Law, this is the law that requires all decisions of public bodies to be made in the open to the public. There are exceptions, which we will get into, but that is the general requirement. And in the statute itself, it lays out why we have this rule. I won't read it out loud to you there, but the underlying policy is that the public needs to be aware of how government decisions are made and information that are relied upon to make those decisions. this policy statement that's in the statute, it's not just aspirational. If you ever get into a public meetings law dispute in court, this is what a court will be looking at whenever it reviews whatever the issue may be. So it is important to keep in mind why we have this law in place at all. So the typical questions you're going to run into with any public meetings law is discussion is, what is a public meeting? What is it required? What can you do during public meeting? How do you do it? What are the location and notice requirements? Are minutes required? What can you discuss outside the public's view? So starting off, who is subject to this law? The governing body of any public body is going to be subject to the public meetings law. And that means any group with the authority to make recommendations to a public body or make recommendations on policy or administration. Public body would typically be things like the county, a state, the city, but it would also be any subcommittees, any advisory groups like yourself, any group that is able to make a policy recommendation to the county would be subject to this act. Folks who wouldn't necessarily be subject to the act are individuals. If an individual is tasked to go find information or make a recommendation, one person can't be a governing body. Likewise, if you happen to have a subcommittee and all they do is gather information, they wouldn't be subject to the act. So we're looking at larger groups that have authority to make policy decisions or recommendations. So what does the act require? The first rule is that all meetings of a governing body have to be open to the public. What this means is the public has to be able to see how the decisions are being made, what information is being relied upon. I guess one nuance to this is public attendance at these meetings, it does not equate to public participation. There's not a requirement that the public is able to make comment. You certainly can as an organization. You can carve out a spot to allow public comment if you want. But just because the public's required to be able to attend doesn't mean they have to participate. There are exceptions to this, of course. There are certain kinds of public hearings that by law, the public has to provide comment on. But I would suspect that's probably not going to apply to this group. I don't know what kind of public participation would be required here. So it's up to you if you ever want to carve out a spot for public to speak, but certainly not required. The other component of the Public Meetings Act is that while you have to keep meetings open to the public, you also can't meet in private. And this seems almost the same as the first rule, but it is a little different in what it is intended to do is prevent folks from meeting in private, whether as a quorum or otherwise, to deliberate on something that should be done at the public meeting. We'll get into some of the more nuances of that later, but that prohibition is important to keep in mind. The act also has requirements for where you hold these meetings. You know, in the pre-COVID days, you would have to do it within the geographic location of where the governing body is, or at the administrative hearing office, if there is one. You'd also have to allow for accommodations for those with disabilities. And if you receive a request, you would have to provide sign language interpretation services or other accommodations for those who may be deaf or hard of hearing. Post-COVID, it's a little different. The governor, when she declared the emergency, she passed an executive order that exempted governing bodies from having to have a location physically. We're allowed to have meetings like we are today on Zoom through any electronic or virtual means. The legislature ended up codifying that last session. So it is now law that we are allowed to have meetings not in person, which is certainly helpful. The act also requires that you give notice of all the public meetings before they happen. There's actually not a set time frame in law for what this is required, what kind of notice is required in terms of the length. The county's rule of thumb is 7 days. That's what we always strive for. It's easy to stick with that, give at least 7 days notice before you have a meeting. The notice itself just needs to be reasonably calculated to give the public notice that a meeting's about to happen. And if you know people are interested, in the particular content of the meeting, whatever's being discussed, you should endeavor to give them actual notice, reach out to them in addition to just a general online posting or however else that you may provide notice generally. You can hold special sessions, but they have to be at least 24-hour notice if you do that. You can't have less. You can have emergency meetings with less than 24-hour notice. I'm not sure if this group would have a situation where they need to have an emergency meeting. It's possible. If you do, you just have to state on the record of the meeting minutes, what is the emergency and why couldn't more than 24 hours notice have been provided. I would caution that emergencies are rare and courts look at them pretty closely. So it's something that should not be used very often. Typically, if we have an emergency at the county, it would be things you would expect, like wildfires. That was an emergency. So there was less than 24-hour notice for some of those meetings. Last, you need to keep minutes of all meetings. The preferred way is just to do it through an audio transcript or a recording. That's simplest. You can do written minute meetings that summarize what happens. Statute lays out what's required in those minutes, and it's all the sort of things you would expect. Who was present? What was discussed? Who voted on what? Were there orders, motions, resolutions, etc.? What were they? Who voted on them? That sort of thing. So nothing too surprising there. I would note that with recording of minutes, our recommendation is that whenever folks vote, that they state their name on the record. It makes for the audio recording. It's easier for somebody reviewing the audio recording to hear who's actually talking. Sometimes voices get garbled. So a name calling. By the way, if anyone has any questions, feel free to interrupt. I don't want to just lecture to the group. If there's anything folks want to talk about, let me know. So those are the general requirements of the Act. And so what is a meeting? A meeting is whenever a quorum is required to take any action or deliberate on anything. That's when you've created a meeting. What it doesn't include are social gatherings, attendance at conferences, on-site inspections are exempt, board retreats, that sort of thing. The only caveat here is that even if you're in a setting with your other board members that doesn't qualify as a meeting, you could turn it into one. You could, if you start talking shop, start talking business, and you're talking about things that need to be done in public, you could effectively turn this, you know, conference or social setting into a meeting that's subject to the Act, which could cause problems. And we certainly don't want folks to run afoul of the statute.
Andrew, excuse me, does it give a definition of a quorum?
It's typically decided by the organization. You would have it in your bylaws to say a quorum is, you know, X number of members present. It's not set in statute. It's up to the governing body. There are sort of default quorum decisions out there. It's usually the majority of folks present, but you have discretion to set what your quorum is. So the exception to the rule that everything be in public are executive sessions. Executive sessions don't need to be held in public. You still have to notice them. You still have to let folks know they're happening, and you have to explain why you're having an executive session. The statute has a finite number of them. So you need to be careful that the reason you're having this closed door meeting actually is permitted by statute. The ones we typically see are litigation discussions, certain disciplinary matters, real property negotiations, labor negotiations. There's a whole list, and I won't get into them there. But you know, if you think you may need to have a closed door meeting, you definitely need to check against the statute and make sure it's authorized. Interestingly enough, if you have an executive session that's improper, the Oregon Ethics Commission has jurisdiction to fine you, which is sort of a strange nuance since they typically deal with ethics complaints against public officials. But they do have this odd bit of reach when it comes to improper executive sessions. And I think the fine is $1,000 per violation or something like that. So there are consequences if an executive session is held improperly. So this slide, we don't really need to go into it, but this is from the Oregon Department of Justice. And I always keep this handy because it's just a nice flow chart to sort of walk through whether or not you need to be worried about the public meeting law. And it's just a series of yes or no questions to help you determine if you need to comply or not. All right, so serial deliberation and daisy chaining. What we're talking about here are communications, meetings, other discussions that don't qualify as a meeting necessarily because there's no quorum present. They could be one-on-one discussions, they could just be emails between board members. However, when you combine them all in certain situations, a court will consider these to basically be a private meeting in violation of the statute. And I apologize in advance, this whole area is about as clear as mud, but we do want to caution folks about it because it is out there and there are decisions out there that could have consequences. In this case I have up on the screen right now, this is probably the clearest example of when this would happen. This was in Lane County where three of the five commissioners engaged in a series of one-on-one meetings, meetings with intermediaries, email discussions, all for the purpose, and this came out at trial, for the purpose of not having a public discussion on a budget, supplemental budget amendment. This is one of those cases where it was clear enough because they basically admitted they didn't want to do it in public because it was controversial and they didn't want to discuss it. And so the court found that these communications back and forth, these various meetings, even though in and of themselves they wouldn't constitute a quorum of folks meeting in private, combined they did. And the folks there got in a lot of trouble for it because it was intentional, it was designed to avoid the public hearing what they were discussing. So there's no clear, bright line when you could cross that. We just want folks to be aware of it, especially with things like group emails. If you have an email to the entire board and you hit reply all is almost never anybody's friend on large emails, but you could quickly create a meeting by deliberating back and forth with the other board members where everyone's on that email chain. That's probably the easiest way to run afoul of these sort of serial communications. So just be aware of it, that it's not necessarily the time or the place you have these discussions, but it's what you're talking about. If you start deliberating with one member about something that you would typically do in public, and then you go to somebody else, and then you go to somebody else, eventually you're going to cross this line, which is not really set by law or by rule, but you can cross over it into an improper private meeting. So what happens if you violate the public meetings law? If you don't do it intentionally, the body could still pay attorney fees to a plaintiff that sues over it. A court could void whatever the decision was that you made. It might not. It has broad discretion to craft any kind of remedy it feels is appropriate. If you do it on purpose, if it's willful, like the Lane County commissioners, where you're intentionally trying to hide it from the public, it could be personal liability for the attorney fees. So there are consequences for violating it. And like I said before, the Oregon Ethics Commission has some authority over executive sessions as well. So that was your Public Meetings Act 101. It was, I apologize, it was pretty quick and streamlined, but those are the basic highlights of the act and how to comply. So if folks have any questions, I'm happy to field them.
Andrew, I was just asking, I have a question about confidentiality.
Sure.
What do you do about when you're having these meetings, committee meetings, and there are subjects in the meeting that are confidential and they're not to be shared outside the committee?
That would be when you would want to consider an executive session, and you would just need to make sure that the reason something is confidential is covered by statute to ensure that executive session is appropriate. There is a executive session justification when you're considering documents that would otherwise be confidential or protected from disclosure under the Public Records Act. So there's a bit of crossover there. So if you're considering something that you wouldn't have to produce if somebody asked for it, that likely could qualify for executive session. So that would be your mechanism to have confidential discussions.
Andrew, on noticing requirements for executive session, are there variances or is it just the same in terms of the meetings in general?
It's the same. Okay. Typically, like with the county, there's a reserved executive session spot on every Tuesday agenda. If you know you're going to have one, you would just tack it on. It gets a little logistically complicated with Zoom about how you have an executive session when folks are able just to sign on to a Zoom webinar. I think you would probably just want to have a separate Zoom link with executive session, separate agenda item before the larger meeting starts, but you would notice it in the same way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Another thing I noted, you had referenced that public comment is not required. And so as Business and Community Services, we're committed to having public comment on all of our ABCs. So I just wanted to share that with the group. And when there are members of the public present, we want to be sure that our agendas include the public comment piece, just to give that opportunity. Under the same guidelines as the board and other areas where, a 3-minute sharing opportunity to facilitate that.
And Andrew, I would just like to add the exemption for the public meetings for board retreats. As a former city councilor in Lake Oswego, we had a ruling from the attorney general that we found, our state attorney general, that you can have meetings that aren't public as long as it's protocol and procedure and, things you're doing as a board as structurally, but not policy. So if you need to figure out how to run a meeting better or to get more camaraderie or to do some, group enhancement, you can do that. But the other stuff like policy and strategy has got to go into public meeting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And any board can have a retreat to kind of get their agendas and their act together. But if it leaks into policy, you can't. So.
Yeah, you just have to be careful that you don't sort of accidentally fall into a meeting by having your board retreat start discussing business matters. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's carved out. It's not considered a public meeting. In fact, our board of county commissioners is on a retreat right now. So hopefully they keep their discussions limited.
Yeah.
Is there a requirement for when the agenda needs to be published and available to the public?
It would be tied to your notice. So there's not a set time frame, but you just want it to be reasonably calculated to give people notice of what you're discussing. Your notice should talk about it just in very broad terms, what you plan on discussing at the meeting. So ideally your agenda would be tied to your notice of when the meeting is going to happen.
So moving forward, Karina, would you be sending out minutes with the agenda packets from now on from the previous meeting?
I'm not sure. I guess that was something we would discuss. I thought what I heard Andrew say was that we could, I think what we've done in the past is we post our audio minutes and the packet of all documents as well as the agenda to the website. But I can, whatever you guys want. Yeah.
Yeah. And we do. So as BCS, we've been moving towards a standard model of what Karina's saying, and then a basic meeting minute attachment, which would not go into great detail, but would outline like major actions, votes, those kinds of things. So it would list the required elements with members present, major topics, votes taken, those kinds of things.
Okay, good.
I'd like to just put a thought out there. As we move forward with more equity and inclusion work across the county, region, and state, I think that the meeting minutes and the transparency of what's going on, it would be good if it was accessible. I mean, accessible in both reading language as well as accessible online for individuals who are vision impaired or translation. So I'd love to have a conversation about that, but I just wanted to throw that out to the group.
I really appreciate that, Bridget. I think that's very important, and the county has some ways that it's making those materials accessible, but I think we can do better.
Thank you for that. I think that what I've heard is to put reading material at a sixth or eighth grade language. And there are apps or sites that can help with that. We're going to be transitioning and exploring what that looks like for our own work at CWP, but just wanted to mention that.
That's a good point.
Okay, anything further? Any other questions for Andrew? Okay, well, thank you, Andrew. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you for having me.
No offense, but hopefully we won't have to call you.
Yes. Yeah. Well, if you do, call me before you decide to do something, not after.
All right. Moving on. Public communication. Do we have any public comments today? Okay. Hearing none. I'm going to move on to commissioner updates, which appears we have no commissioners because they're all at a retreat. So we'll just sail right by that one. 2020 final report recap. John Lamott, take it away.
What I'm going to do is just kind of touch on the key points. As we know, we had a crazy year because of COVID. We did have a diverse set of subjects and topics. A lot of it was COVID related as to what we as a county are doing to move money into our businesses and get money from the state and feds. But we had several topic areas, and I'm going to hit them real quick. The first one was childcare, which became a very big discussion. Our very own Bridget Daze was the one that was leading this one, and it was an eye-opener, to say the least. A couple of quick statistics that the county... kids that are zero, just born to 2 years old, really have 13% of them have access to childcare in our county compared to higher levels in other counties. And while you think it's not necessarily initially related to economic development, it really is, because not only do businesses need it, they make decisions on locations that are where that's at. And it's a kind of an undercurrent that we don't see often in the economic development world, but they are making decisions if childcare is on site or somewhere nearby or not. And so we raised that as an issue that we had to deal with in general, but during COVID, it got worse and worse, as we all know, especially since several of these childcare operators are small and they were losing business and couldn't get the kids in, and some of them going out of business. So it's something that in the longer term, I think we're going to continue to look at. And Bridget has been our point person on that. And then when you think about, again, companies making decisions, if we not only have it, but have it out there, but actually could promote it. I keep thinking about this, where we have a network that can be promoted and used to help market the county, that would be a great thing. So we're going to continue to look at that. The next thing that we looked at was a business resource map that the county economic development staff put together with communications folks to show who's open and what they offer. I think that's something also that has some long-term viability, again, since so many people are social media savvy or at least accessible. We found that over in Lake Oswego locally and then with the county map that it was great to at least get some shining light on some of our businesses that, yes, they're alive, they're open, and here's where they're located and here's what they offer. So that was a new thing for the county, and to the staff's credit, they developed it pretty quick and really nice response. The next thing was we had some really good sessions with Matt Miller when he was at GPI, Greater Portland Inc., about their overall community economic development planning and how they want to plug in with us and other economic development groups throughout the region to give them good direction on putting the regional economic development plan together. There's a little hiccup when he left, and obviously with COVID, so we still want to stay tuned to being an input place for them as to what's going on at the bigger picture at a county level and even some of our cities that are represented. And they're looking at their clusters similar to ours. They've got computers and electronics as one group, software is another, athletic and outdoor, obviously, because of our big hitters in the region, metals and machinery, health sciences and technology, clean tech, design and media, food and beverage, and distribution and e-commerce. And I think what I got out of it was not only that they look at big picture economic development goals and directions and policies, but those specific clusters that we can target because we have strength there as well. The next thing was we had a session with MISO, the Micro Enterprises Services of Oregon, who is our administrator for our grants going out to the COVID response. We had similar in Lake Oswego, where our planning department administered the monies going out and reviewed the folks that were in need. MISO has been doing a great job. They already were in existence as a group that could help disadvantage minority-owned, women-owned, and disadvantaged businesses to help get grants and get some technical assistance. I like the fact that they stress technical assistance, not just here's your grant and or you're not getting a grant. And we've gone to them for a couple of rounds based on our economic development staff, and they're doing a good job. They just told me, I talked to them about a potential business assistance for a local business. The grants have dried up right now. Money's still going to be coming down the pipe. But the loan programs they developed, including a 40-60 loan program, is really good. And they're also just good on technical assistance and where to go if they can't do it. So I feel that MISO's been doing a pretty good job. The next thing we did is we had Cushman Wakefield come in to give us kind of a really overview of what they're seeing as a national real estate group for where our land uses in economic development are going. They talked about the industrial sector, which was still hanging in there at similar pre-COVID levels, but more on warehousing because of everybody doing stuff online rather than manufacturing, which is a little bit scary that we're not getting more manufacturing going. We hopefully will come back out of that. And then when they talked about commercial buildings and office buildings, that was really interesting because there was some fear mongering going on that we would have 70% loss in office buildings around the country. Because of COVID, people wouldn't be coming back. They didn't project that. They felt it was a lot more like 10% or so that people will return. They had done a national survey with baby boomers and millennials. They thought the millennials would want to stay home. That was the opposite. The millennials said they want to be back for team building and having a beer after work and mentoring and learning and socializing. And then the baby boomers were saying they kind of like being alone because they don't have people bugging them during the day for information. And I think they had to remind him that somebody has to mentor the people and grow the company. So anyway, I thought it was a very good comprehensive overview of where we're at with these different development sectors, but also that we will return somewhat to a normal level for office use, people being together. They also talked about absorptions and rents and what's going up and down. So I think hopefully in a couple of months with the vaccinations, we're going to be out of some of the low points. The next thing, we talked about the Clackamas County Community College Scholarship that has been put together. And we learned all kinds of things about having opportunities with people changing jobs or coming into the job world and working with the college, who Alyssa knows we have so many great programs out there. We just got to keep getting them out to the people to know that they're there for them. And then the last couple of things real quick is the business recovery centers. Washington County started before us, and they actually put recovery centers together in different parts of the county. They came over and talked to us about that. And basically, it's somewhere where you can not only get grants passed and administered, but also really some hands-on technical assistance. We found businesses that are really good at their business, but they might be so small they don't know how to go through a government process to get help. But these centers are really starting to work. And then once we were done, soon thereafter, our economic development staff got on it and helped set up business recovery centers, which maybe after I'm done, John or Cindy or Sarah can talk about. But we've got them spread out through Clackamas County as well. And then our recommendations, I'm just going to read them quick. And this is something we want to talk about a little bit today, kind of our board retreat thinking, strategic thinking. What did we recommend to the Board of County Commissioners? One was align the county's economic development strategy, which evolves all the time, with GPI. So what do we as a county want to do and how do we plug that in the GPI? And then what is GPI doing? How can we get that back to Clackamas? Request feedback from businesses on lessons learned from COVID. That's something that we're hearing a lot of from other counties and cities, that if we've learned a lesson, let's kind of formalize it, whether it's in our emergency response plans or in our economic development plans, so we can move even quicker, even though staff was moving pretty quick. develop recovery strategies for downtown business quarters that are going vacant. I think everybody's been nervous about retail. We talked about office before with Cushman & Wakefield, but with retail losing so many folks, restaurants, et cetera, that what can we do globally in the county to help our downtowns and our commercial corridors so that they're not struggling or at least can find some common ground or some common resources. The next was increase more diversity on the EDC with women-owned businesses, minorities, Latinx, and disadvantaged businesses. Vance will talk a little bit more about what we need to do for more outreach and filling gaps and categories to get folks involved. Create a marketing plan and promote the development opportunities in our county for businesses that are looking to migrate out of the urban areas. We talked about that a year ago with the chair and the commission. And what can we do to really highlight what we have, knowing there are folks that want more of a suburban, quiet, rural environment rather than from the Cushman Wakefield lecture into what we talked about, that movement is going, that people are coming out and wanting some of our locations. So how do we market them? And then last but not least is move forward with the land bank authority due to the opportunity to recycle real estate to make it more economical for the area and for the county. The land bank authority was kind of getting organized right before COVID hit, got put on the shelf for a little bit. And the discussion with the county board was to try and get that going again. So that's something we still need to talk about. So Vance, Chair Vance, that's the presentation of the county board from last December. And we can go to the next section of the agenda.
Any questions for John? Thank you, John. Hearing none. Bridget, sorry.
I do. I wanted to ask if there are conversations that are happening about how to make the business recovery centers more sustainable, because moving forward, those will be huge, you know, hot spots and hubs for disseminating information. And it might be happening in another meeting that I'm not able to join, but it would just be great to hear if there's some planning that goes into that.
I think, John LaGarza, can you tell us where we're at with the business centers? Are they temporary? Are they long-term? And what are we thinking they're going to be in the long-term?
Sure. I mean, Sarah, I can talk on it. We're, you know, in the process of trying to identify if there's some additional funding available for the next quarter here. We have an ask into the board of the county commissioners for some, you know, there's some remaining CARES Act, but there's several departments that are competing for the remaining CARES dollars. So after the board gets out of the retreat, we'll have an update, Bridget, back to the BRCs. But we do understand the importance and the outreach that they've done a fantastic job in a short amount of time to help us, you know, deploy close to over $5 million in grants to the communities here. But again, there's just only so much funding left, and we don't know where the board's going to sit on that, but we'll know shortly.
I can appreciate that, John. I would hope that the EDC then maybe takes it up to champion those as a strategy or a tactic to see what other options or opportunities might exist. Just a thought. Oh, and the other thing I think would be helpful to the point about diversifying the Economic Development Council. I was on a call yesterday with LEADIC, which is the Leaders in Equity and Diversity and Inclusion for the county. And they were sharing that the Coalitions of Communities of Color environmental scan is done. And so they were talking about the recommendations that that produced. And there is an RFP right now out that I believe launched yesterday in order to take that work to the next level or the next phase. And so I think that perhaps bringing them in to have a conversation or maybe a EDC meeting with LEADIC to talk about how to partner or work towards those goals. Just some thoughts.
I have
a question for John. So, John, if I got this right, the business centers are more, if I got it right, temporary during COVID to help with the grants planning. Are they looked at as long-term permanent centers with the way we have them set up? I think that's one question I had, and picked it up a little bit from Bridget.
The existing CARES funding that we received allowed them to be in operation until the end of December there. However, the new CARES funding allows them to be eligible to apply for funding also under their 501(c)(3) status too. So that some of the you know, basically the BRCs are our chambers. So some of those chambers are making application under the new CARES funding that came out to be able to apply to get some funding to help them too. So I think we'll see a hybrid model that probably comes out at the end of the day there.
I had a question to John and maybe Vance. I know the previous year that I sat in on our presentation to the of our annual report to the board, there was some good give and take after that. What did you think the county's response to our annual report was?
Let me take that. So I think, you know, we get engaged with the county commissioners pretty heavily, but I think we were going through a couple lame duck terms and COVID added in there. And so while it was like, yeah, this is good dialogue, I didn't feel we had enough direction or specifics that came out of it. So I think the executive committee's talked about that. What do we do now to keep going into 2021, knowing we're still in COVID kind of lockdown, so to speak? But that's a good question.
To echo what John's saying, you know, I think a lot of it under normal circumstances, you know, the county commissioners give us a very clear direction at the beginning of the year, and they say, here's what we'd like you to look at. And then we can come to the end of the year and say, here's what we did. Well, last year that train went completely off the rails. And so, you know, there wasn't what I would say was a clear direction. It was, well, look at this and look at this and look at this. So hence the annual report was a bit of a hodgepodge, like, well, we looked at that and we looked at this. And to John's point, we also did have a couple of lame ducks there. And so this is something, I mean, I'll bring this up now, but I was going to bring it up later. What, as far as where we're going this year, right now we don't know, because as you can see, we have no county commissioners here. So we're waiting to have a meeting with them and say, okay, where would you like us to go, and have that conversation with them and get a clearer direction as far as, would you like us to continue focusing on COVID relief, or would you like us to move in a different direction? But I didn't want to come in here at this meeting and say, we're definitely going to do this, because next week that could change from direction from the county commissioners. One thing we are going to be focused, one of the things I hope we can focus on this year, is a more concerted effort on recruitment of board members, and maybe a more focused effort as to what kinds of board members we're looking for to represent certain sectors in the business community. It's been pretty loosey-goosey in the past, and so we're seeing now that we need to have a little bit more focus in that. And to that end, John and Alyssa are working on that, and we'll have a report hopefully next month on how we can move forward and bring that to the board for their input as well.
Good. Thank you. I want to make sure that we have our definition of the prize before we have to focus our eyes on it. And it seems to me as though relevance is, you know, are we really being effective? And that's what I was looking for.
Yep.
And I think the other thing is back to what Vance saying about getting with the board again is especially with new members, that we focus on the short term, obviously, what we can do. And I think staff has been doing a great job. You know, there's really just so much you can do in the short term, and then the longer term, and always being careful because of staffing, because, you know, we've all been on a million different boards and let's go do this and let's go do that and do this and that. But if the staff can't do it, then, you know, it doesn't go anywhere. Like, example, McLaughlin, a lot of action on that a year ago. And then we were wanting to follow up somehow, some way with grants, or to get the three departments together, you know, get the, you know, economic development and transportation and planning together. And it just didn't happen with staffing and funding. So I think, we got to get that. So what the Economic Development Commission knows what they're doing, and what they're saying and helping the board with. And we need to do that sooner than later. Reorganize to get our right members, including bigger businesses, and then get some specific things to be working on this year. So good point.
Yeah, I would like to see pointed outreach to minority-owned business owners and have that as one of the, as a focus. I would love to see more diversity and inclusion on the board and their members.
I know that has been brought up, Shannon, so you know, your point is well taken.
And I think when we've organized a new approach, we all have to be involved because it is hard to recruit. It's hard to just leave that on Cindy and Sarah and John and Karina or just a couple of people on the board. I think once we get, here's what we're looking for, everybody should be out, you know, in the streets and roads saying, hey, would you like to check out the Economic Development Commission? And we talked about onboarding, having a better onboarding package so people know more what we're doing and how we do it. So we're chipping away. And then we wanted to hear a little bit more at a later time or separately from Jody and Stacia because they're coming in fresh and new from pretty big organizations and get some ideas from them as well.
I wanted to tag on to Shannon's comment about the diversity with just a small personal anecdote is that my cobbler is Korean and his language skills are minimal. He knows slightly more English than I knew Korean, and but he's an outstanding cobbler. But I asked him how his business was doing, and he said he's just absolutely going in the toilet. And so I told him about the recovery centers. He'd never heard of it. And to her credit, my wife contacted the chamber, and when she recommended that they reach out to him. She found out that yes, and they have a native Korean speaker who would be able to communicate with them, because not only did he not know what was going on, but even if he had known what was going on, he wouldn't have been able to communicate that to anybody. So it's nice that that aspect of the recovery center is actually working.
Thank you, William. Let's see. Any other comments on the annual report?
Just wanted to throw in a couple of things. So we do have a policy session scheduled with the board to get on February 9th. So the executive team will be meeting to have that discussion with them. So that'll be great because we can bring it back to the next meeting. And then also we've had some brainstorming around the equity, diversity, and inclusion. And because with COVID, I think the county has really gone to new places, and with the BRCs in action, you know, we brainstorm how they can help make those connections to business owners they're prioritizing. And so one idea we have, and this can be for later, but too, is, you know, helping them basically market and recruit for the EDC once we have some goals set and stuff. So I think that'll be a really unique, fun opportunity to see, because there's been some great connections made. The Emergency Operations Center had a liaison section, still does, that's totally focused on connecting with different members of the community from, you know, just historically disadvantaged business owner perspective and all of that. So there's a lot of really great stuff going on. We have one person who focused solely on reaching out to Latinx business owners and has great connections there. The BRCs, as you mentioned, William, have language resources that are phenomenal, and the EOC liaisons do as well. They have liaisons dedicated for different languages, and we have county staff around that can do that. And if they don't have staff, then they have other mechanisms to facilitate conversations in other languages. So I think there's lots of good stuff we can tap into, which is pretty exciting.
Can I tack on to your comment there, Sarah, is that I just read an article in this month's Harper's Magazine about how non-PC the term Latinx is becoming. It's only used by 3% of the Latino community, and they consider it denigrating in the fact that it seems as though the non-Latino community is trying to neutralize their culture rather than learn it. So I'm trying to be very conscious in my efforts not to use the phrase Latinx.
That's really a great comment to facilitate some conversation, because there are, you know, terms and the words we use are really important, and we could probably spend a whole session talking about that too.
Oh yeah.
And it's a great point, William, because yeah, there's different terminology, and being familiar with it is important.
Question, Sarah, can you tell us where we're at with the your emergency staff? They would talk about us being involved as an EDC, giving them input on the business part of it. Is there any follow-up yet on that?
Nothing specific. That's a great point, John. So there is some recovery planning efforts. Once the wildfires happened in September, it's kind of blended the recovery work between wildfire recovery and COVID recovery. But I think we'll be seeing some things get back going now that we're kind of emerging from that space. So we should be able to, get a better update for you, because I know, yeah, the EDC's contributions and input there will be important to represent the business community. So hopefully more on that soon.
Good. Any other comments, questions? Okay, moving on. Did you all get a chance to review the employment numbers from Lynn? And if so, do you have any questions for Lynn?
I'm not aware that I sent anything out.
Yeah, Vance, we didn't request any employment numbers from Lynn. I thought we weren't doing that this month. We were going to discuss moving forward how you wanted the process to be.
Okay, well, forget I said that. I was just going off the one I had, so.
Okay.
Bridget, do you have anything you want to share with us?
I don't have, there's a lot that I could share, but I would say that I will limit it to, there are increasing conversations about talking about good jobs and what is a good job in the community and across the country. And there are, when 56% of our population is at risk of not being able to make a payment on any such thing, I think that's there should be alarm about economic equity. And so a good job is defined by the national, hold on just a second, I just want to make sure, the National Fund for Workforce Solutions is something that is a family wage that offers benefits, that is in tune with their employees and team. And is really talking about, like, how do we change culture so that they're in within companies and organizations in a way that is inclusive and that brings people in so people feel safe. And so I know that there's going to be a lot more conversations about what do good jobs mean for Clackamas County and the Portland metro region, and how can we collectively think about and work towards increasing the opportunities for people who have historically been marginalized or disadvantaged. So more to come on that, and I will stop there.
Thank you. Final discussion for today. It has been brought to my attention by a former board chair, Charles Gallia, who submitted a formal request that the Economic Development Committee consider writing a letter asking for the resignation of Clackamas County Commissioner Mark Shull. And I, for those of you who, hopefully everybody's aware of some of the comments he's made. Anyway, I want to open it for discussion and see what people think, and we can take it from there. So if anybody wants to start off, other commissions, and Sarah, you can jump in here and correct me. Other department heads and committees have already submitted letters within Clackamas County. I don't know which ones specifically, but it's at our discretion whether we choose to take that route or not.
Yeah, there have been, just to give you some context, there was a letter submitted to Administrator Schmidt and to the board that had signatures from all of the department directors and other elected officials in the county. So that includes folks like the district attorney, the county clerk, those folks who are also elected, as well as over 20 senior leaders that are deputy directors or managers. There's been our Board of County Commissioners, each member has also openly asked Commissioner Scholl to resign in business meetings. And then there have been some ABCs. We checked in yesterday with our Public and Government Affairs team, and they're aware of a few who've also submitted letters. And the one they provided as a sample was from the Tourism Development Council. So there's been quite a bit of written and formal letters submitted to the board calling for Commissioner Scholl's resignation.
John?
So, Sarah, on that note, did we get direction from the county council that advisory boards are okay to make those kind of statements if we're supposed to be neutral, objective advisors to the county board? I mean, they did it. Obviously, the tourism advisory group did it. So is it okay procedurally to do that as a board? That's, I think, one of the struggles all of us would have.
Yes. So in checking into that, it is acceptable for an ABC under protocol, and there was no formal protocol that had to be followed. We just want to be sure if the body here decides to do that, that the letter, you know, explicitly states who it's coming from, and those kinds of things. So, but it is totally allowable if the commission feels that that's the direction it wants to go.
William?
Two things come to my mind. One is normally in these situations, I try to advise neutrality in the fact that I don't want to burn any bridges. The flip side of that, however, is with all four other commissioners already on record for having asked for his resignation, and with the outcry, as Sarah has explained, of so many other different agencies, small a, also requesting that, then I have no issues with that. The next question that I often ask is its efficacy. Will our voice add any weight to the argument in hopes of dissuading the commissioner to resign? That's pretty unlikely. I don't know that our voice is going to make one bit of difference in his decision. But it may be good for our image. And then I'll make my last point is that I think that it would be important for us to take the easy path, stand on the right of the what seems to be the majority and the moral righteousness of it, given the egregious comments that have been made, in for no other reason to tell people that we care, and maybe to heighten our profile for those individuals that still do not know what the EDC is. So I have not only no issues with it, I would encourage us to write a letter.
I would as well. But I don't know that I have a vote yet.
John?
Well, I think, you know, the initial reaction for me was, okay, are we okay to do it as an advisory board to an elected board? And also then, because I've been involved with economic development commissions and departments and initiatives and planning departments all over the country, is it appropriate for a neutral, objective, quote unquote, business group to do it? But I think in this situation, the kind of where William's going, it's pretty bad. I kept thinking as I talked with some folks yesterday, if this was some locker room humor that was done when he was 18 or 19 and 20, 30 years have passed and he's kind of redeemed himself and worked in the community. But this happened in the last year or two, and it happened in a very deep and really bad way. So I think us weighing in is like the other advisory boards. They say, hey, this isn't appropriate and we should deal with it. And if we're going to meet with them soon and we're going to be their economic development sounding board or voice, he should know that this group isn't happy with what he did. And that's why I think some businesses in America were speaking up on things and others instead of taking the neutral position. So I would go towards a letter from us to the board saying, no, you should resign.
That brings another log to the fire, John, in the fact that we could also make the point that our purpose is to advise the county on things that directly impact our economic climate. And I think that attitude that has been purported, you know, that has been, I'm trying to think of a word, which is not common for me. But I think that does impact our potential for attracting business to Clackamas County. And we could certainly make that point. And to that end, I would like to make a motion that the EDC craft a letter asking for Commissioner Scholl's resignation.
Second.
I had a quick question for Sarah and John. Did the two of you sign off on one of the letters?
I gave my name for the one that came. So the one from the department directors named every department director, but the deputy directors and the other managers were just named in number. So it was like 21.
Right.
In there, yes. But they did not list the positions below the elected and the director level by name. So you won't see my name in there, but yes, Strickland.
Mm-hmm. And Vance, if I could add to what Sarah's saying is, if you think about it, it's such a serious level that neutral, objective county staff, municipal and county staff employees are saying this isn't right. Typically, staff of a government, whatever level, will not weigh in on something because their elected officials do the policy work and take the heat and the bubbles. I mean, the bullets. But in this case, I think it's so bad that when you have department heads saying we're going to have a hard time working with this board and this person because of this situation, I think that's pretty serious. So,
thank you, John. Jeff, you had your hand up there.
I do. Thank you. The letter that is sent should be crafted around the impact on economic development to the county. So it stays within our wheelhouse.
Agreed.
Agreed. LaGarza had his hand up a second ago.
I did. I think this is a great conversation that, you know, you as the commission are having. I do value the input, especially when you keep it directed around the economic development for Clackamas County. You know, we're going to have to think about how we kind of recover for business expansion, business retention, and people looking to locate in our region. You know, the county has done some fantastic steps. I sit on the EDIC committee for economic and, you know, for equity, diversity, inclusion in our county. We also submitted a letter. But, you know, we've taken great steps as a county and over the last, I'd say, 3 to 4 years. So I value the conversation that's happening here today. So thank you for that.
Motion on the floor, Mr. Chair.
Well, let's who's made the motion?
I did.
Could you repeat the motion, please?
I move that the EDC craft a letter asking for Commissioner Scholl's resignation, and I expanded that by making sure that it, thanks to Jeff's comments as well, that it be focused on Commissioner Scholl's impact on our economic development, the county's economic development.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Yep.
Okay. I've asked Karina to roll call vote since that way each person as you vote, state your name and how you vote. I'll start. Vance Tong, I vote in favor. Yay.
John Lamont?
Yay.
Sarah Ekman?
Well, she...
No, just the...
Yeah,
Alyssa.
Board members.
Alyssa Mayer?
Alyssa Mahar, aye.
I think that was an aye.
Yes, I'm sorry if I'm frozen.
Vance, you want to just read them? Because I think she's not seeing all the.
I think that's it. You just.
Yeah.
Are you?
Well,
are
Shannon you... and Jody and Stacia.
Yay.
Shannon.
William.
Aye.
Jody.
Jody Bailey, aye.
And Stacia.
Stacia Hernandez, aye.
I don't think I missed anyone. Okay, sounds like we passed.
Did you get Jeff?
Oh, Jeff. I'm sorry, Jeff.
Jeff? Whoops.
Jeff.
Hello, Jeff. He's feeding the cat.
He must be feeding the cat, so.
Can you guys, hello?
Hello.
Welcome back, Karina.
You guys hear me?
It's been unanimous, Karina, with only Jeff not voting. Did you hear that? Okay. With that, I have nothing further for today's meeting. So are there any comments for the good of the order?
I would just say that as we set the agenda for the next 10 months, Stacia, while you're on with us, if we can somewhere, not now, but down the road, get a presentation and update on the Falls and Oregon City project, as that's a huge development opportunity for the county and for the region. So it would be great to get a refresher from you.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to do that. And we're at a point where I think in the next, you know, hopefully 3 to 4 weeks, we'll finalize our visioning plan for the site. So we'll be able to present that. I would welcome the opportunity. Thank you.
Great.
For the good of the order, I would mention that yesterday the Oregon City Business Alliance had the city, that our county seat, had the city manager, Tony Conkle, give a presentation. And I know a few of you were there. But that will be recorded and up on the OCBA's YouTube channel. It was pretty informative. We tend to hold our speakers feet to the fire and ask some pretty pointed questions. So if you'd like to watch the city manager dance, give us a day or two. We'll get that recording up on our YouTube channel.
Vance, I just wanted to mention, maybe we could have a brief discussion. So I'm a little confused about how you would like your economic update each month, or if you would like it. I was thinking sending it out early, like a week early. I don't even, most of the months, I don't have the data yet. It's not even in. So I don't know if just like putting like a press release, I could do it just a few hours, like at the day before the meeting and send it to you then. And most of the months I would have the most current data and not really get into the, you know, PowerPoint presentations. And so I don't know what the group would rather have.
I think that would be best, Lynn. You know, that if you could get, I mean, like I said, ideally it would go out with the agenda packet, but I understand the complicating factor with the data not being available a week ahead of the meeting. So, you know, the sample one pager I got was perfect in my view. So something like that would be fantastic if you could send it out before the meeting and or have Karina send it out before the meeting so that we all have it in our hands at the meeting. And then if people have questions after looking it over, they can ask you at the meeting itself.
Sounds good.
Are these reports different than those that Lynn, you put out to as your general publications?
I'm not sure what you're referring to, but
well, I'm on your mailing list for, you know, you.
My economic indicators. Mm-hmm. No, they would be a little different.
Okay.
Yeah, I could just do it in all text, just a one-page text to just kind of, you know, tell you which industries lost jobs, which industries gained jobs, a little bit about the workforce.
And I always enjoyed your slides in the previous meetings. The graphs were very helpful.
I like pictures.
I think we're talking about a time constraint here. is I'm kind of getting the feeling that, you know, that took too long during the meeting. So I am open to whatever you guys want me to do. But I understand that there's always this time issue.
Lynn, I think the original couple of first ones when we were really getting new data based on the COVID impact were like a full presentation for the commission. But I think then when we're getting regular ones, they can be just like Vance is saying, smaller, tighter. And then if anybody has a question, they can ask it. Because I think you've got a rhythm going with, you know, the data, and we're used to it. We're used to your data. So I think you just keep it short and sweet. And if we get it ahead of time, that's great. And we go from there.
So I'm hearing you'd rather have some slides along with the text, or?
No slides.
No
slides. Okay.
Just send us the, you know, the information ahead of time. Everybody looks at it on their own. And then, you know, if they have questions, they can say, Lynn, regarding, you know, graph number one or two or whatever it is that you provide us, you know, I was confused about this. Can you explain it a little more? That sort of thing. Because I think the information you provide is great, and I really like it. But I'd like us to move the meetings along a little quicker.
Okay. So I can put some slides in a document.
Yeah, terminology. One is, it wouldn't be slides. We're talking about graphs.
That's what I mean. I don't mean slides. I mean,
that's what I thought.
Which would be fine. Okay.
Great. Did you freeze, Vance?
I'm back now. So if there's nothing further, I'm going to adjourn the meeting before we have other freeze-ups here. So thanks for your input, everybody. And I will talk to you soon.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
New Year. Thank you.
Bye.
Happy New Year.